Welcome to the Swiss Institute, to the first panel this afternoon at 4 o'clock. I'm really proud of that show, of Rita Ackermann, who's here too, and actually she will be part of the panel next week, together with Charlene van Hale and Peter Doig. It's also at 4 o'clock. And I'm really excited to welcome Dan Graham, Harmony Corinne, and I want to thank especially Antoine Catala to moderate this afternoon's talk, and have fun.
Hi, thank you for being here. So I'm going to introduce Dan and Harmony briefly. On my left sits Dan Graham, considered by many a conceptual artist. Dan was born in 1942 in Illinois, but spent most of his childhood in New Jersey. Dan didn't go to college, and at a mere 20, he opened a gallery in New York City, a financial disaster, but the gallery saw the emergence of some of the greatest American artists of the second part of the last century, included Robert Smithson, Sol Lee with Carl Andre, Dan Flavin. After the collapse of the gallery, Dan relocated to New Jersey, and on his transit journeys, he conceived what would become one of his best known pieces today, Homes for America, a mock think piece whereby, through talking about the outskirts of the city, Dan reflects upon the desires and aspirations of the city center, a sort of a mirror effect. This self-aware self-definition in trompe-l'oeil is something that will be part of Dan's work all the way throughout. Dan is an avid music aficionado. He would go to music show with a huge tape recorder on his shoulders and tape all concerts, something that triggered a number of connections with musicians at the beginning of their careers, Glenn Branca, Steve Reich, Sonic Youth, to name a few. Dan wrote about music in pretty sensational ways, and also directed two videos about music, Rock My Religion and Minor Threats, that are both pretty phenomenal. Always changing gear, Dan switched to architecture and urbanism and started to work on a series of fun and sometimes a bit unsettling outdoor pavilions made of two-way mirror. The two-way mirror, because of the semi-reflective quality, reflects the viewer onto the viewers, onto the cityscape in a forever changing, morphing identity landscape. I don't have time to mention everything that Dan did, some pretty funny performances like Lax Relax, for instance, but I think I should mention Don't Trust Anybody Over 30, which is pretty much about a society of youth culture, a theme that permeates throughout Harmony Corinne's filmography, and especially in his latest film, Trash Humpers. Don't Trust Anybody Over 30 is a puppet play, and Dan can maybe talk about it later. Harmony Corinne sits to my right. Born in 1973 in California, he spent most of his childhood in Nashville, Tennessee. He moved to New York at around 18, and while skating, met Larry Clark, who asked him to write the scenario of what would become the movie Kids. The film made a huge splash, and Harmony went on to direct Gomo at a mere 23. I think Gomo is responsible for a huge fashion shift globally, and half of the people in Williamsburg, where I live, still look like they were part of the movie. As a Frenchie, I witnessed Gomo being responsible for introducing a Jerry Springer type of America to European crowds. This image of a white trash America resonated really well with the type of propaganda that runs throughout Europe. For instance, that America is composed of fat Jesus freaks who Europeans should be scared of. Around that time, Harmony moved out of New York to the suburbs, just like Dan, and later France and England. Harmony also directed movies Julian Donkey Boy, Mr. Lonely, and Trash Humpers, all films that gain instant cult status. In these films, oftentimes he places actors in situations and dares them to act, something I call skit directing. So Harmony merely sets an apparatus for things to unfold. A fan of vaudeville, Harmony films are little sketches, collaged. They don't follow an overarching narrative. Harmony is also very involved with music. The video for Will Oldman's song, No More Workhouse Blues, being one of my favorite music videos of all time. In Trash Humpers alone, he features the musician Dave Cloud from the Gospel Power and Brian Kotzer from Lee from the Silver Jews. Trash Humpers is a very sad comedy about young people dressed in elderly costume humping trash cans and streetlights. Another thing about Harmony's movies is that they feature actors in costume and or play acting, again a sort of mirror-like perspective shift, a theme that runs throughout Dan's work. So both of you, you're kind of comedian a little bit, and I was wondering what were your like favorite comedy films?
I just wanted to correct something. I deny that I was a conceptual artist. Because conceptual art was pseudo-serious, like art after philosophy, and the people that influenced me most were artists dealing with anarchistic humor, Stanley Brown and Ann Kawara. Ann's work is very funny, from an existential point of view, and I think most of my work, including the pavilions, has something to do with play and humor. And to answer the question, before I was 13 years old, I used to love the films of Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin. Now they seem very silly. And then later I became very more involved with the work of Dean Martin than Jerry Lewis.
My favorite comedians? I always loved Marx Brothers. I like really base humor. I always pretty much liked physical comedy, slapstick, Three Stooges. Jerry Lewis is terrific. Buster Keaton, Chaplin. I liked a lot of vaudeville stuff too. Eddie Cantor, Al Jolson, things that when I was pretty young, when I would take trips up to New York, my dad would take, this before YouTube, we would go to like the Museum of Television Broadcasting, and sometimes he would show me these things I think he liked, and I was pretty much amazed by some of the vaudeville performers, some of his performances and stuff. It was pretty exciting. So, yeah, the comedy-wise, that's pretty much it.
But don't you like another film?
In terms of going back to film, my favorite film was a combination of science fiction film and a satirical spoof. It's called The Tenth Victim by Elio Petri.
Oh, yeah, it's a good one.
With Ursula Andrews, who's pretty amazing. She's Swiss, by the way, Ursula Andrews. And Marcello Mastroianni. My other favorite film was a film with Dean Martin and also a wonderful actress, Kim Novak, Kiss Me Stupid, by Billy Wilder. I really love all of Billy Wilder's films.
What was the one that they did together where they're riding on a camel in the sand together? Do you remember that one, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis?
Actually, you've researched Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. I can't remember anything because I was a very unobservant child at that moment. But the thing is that Dean Martin always plays himself. In other words, people think he's an Italian drunk, even though he was not a big drinker. So he just played that role. In other words, he dealt in sort of cliches. And Harmony and I have one of our favorite albums that we share, Self-Portrait by Bob Dylan, where he croons all his old songs as if he's Dean Martin. He always said that his big hero was Dean Martin. Bob Dylan.
Yeah, that was the first time I ever met. I forget how it happened, but we were talking about that Bob Dylan record.
You gave, it was Rita's birthday party, and you gave her a Self-Portrait.
Oh, that's what it was. He's got a really good memory.
Which, by the way, has a very terrible self-portrait of himself. They painted of himself.
And he said the famous quote from that was that he had made that to get all the hippies off his front yard.
Yes.
And then you'd brought up the fact that, because he croons on a lot of it, and you'd brought up the fact that you thought it was him doing a Dean kind of imitation or a homage or something.
Yes, presentation.
Yeah, presentation. That's pretty, it always stuck with me. You saying that?
I'll tell you the kind of satiric music that I don't think I like. Frank Zappa, too moralistic. I used to like Ween in the beginning, but I realized that they're misogynist. Ween.
Oh yeah.
And when I went to a Ween concert, there were all these NYU students. I guess we don't like NYU students in this neighborhood. All these NYU students were kind of pushing down women in the audience.
They were beating women?
Well, no, it was like a mash pit.
Oh really?
Yeah. But the work was very misogynist, Ween.
Yeah. And that's the best part of it.
Oh yes. But physical comedy does have some nastiness to it, right?
Yeah. I always loved it. I always thought because there's like pain involved, right? So someone slips on a banana peel and they crack their head open. It's very funny. But it's also like someone getting hurt. I just thought that was always exciting. That's when I used to, for a while I was trying to make these movies where I would get beaten up. In the film, I would start fights with people or provoke them. This is like about 12 years ago, provoke them to fighting me, beating me up. And it was, a lot of it was kind of like, at least at the time, I was attempting to make what I would consider like the great American comedy, and which would just consist entirely of me getting beaten up. But a lot of it kind of, I was trying to distill what I had seen in like Stooges films and Keaton movies, but it didn't really work out so much.
You didn't get beat up?
Yeah, I did. I got beat up and got arrested and a lot of bones broken and stuff. But it just wasn't that funny. And then also people were always coming up to me on the street thinking that there was a camera following me all the time, and then they would just get punched out. I would just be getting smashed all the time. People would be smashing me. I just didn't have I wanted to make like a 90-minute feature that would just consist entirely of one fight after another. And I had forgotten how short the fights last, 2 or 3 minutes, and I wanted to fight every demographic, Noah's Ark or something. But I was like, I wanted to fight, you know, a Greek and a lesbian and have it keep going. And I only made it like 7 or 8.
What do you think of Andy Kaufman's wrestling women?
Oh yeah, that was terrific.
That's pretty nasty. And then what he did apparently was he got every woman he wrestled, he got their address and phone number, and when he would appear,
he boned them.
In different cities, he would call them up and date them.
Yeah. That's the best part. He was dating. He liked big women.
Mm-hmm. I think my interest in comedy and my work comes a lot out of my Jewish heritage. And I think Jerry Springer is in that tradition of kind of low-key, ironic comments on things that are happening around him. When I did Performer Audience Mirror, describing the audience, it was almost like a radio announcer describing a baseball game, a play-by-play. Also, I think my work has a lot to do with self-consciousness. This piece I did, you might not be aware of, called Lax Relax, is an homage to Dean Martin. It's called Lax Relax. I did it in the 60s. In front of a tape recorder, the tape recorder is playing a woman breathing in and breathing out, saying the word lax, breathing in and breathing out, in kind of like a yoga exercise, and I'm talking into the microphone, which comes out of the same amplifier, the word relax. Breathing in and breathing out, relax. So everybody in the audience relaxes. It's like relaxes, gets more relaxed, and as I get more relaxed, I almost get into a state where I'm hypnotizing myself and the audience. I think it's still apropos now because of the interest in yoga. But the way I figured the piece out is I wrote an article about the Dean Martin TV program. And I think Dean Martin, I think relaxation is very positive in America, whereas the fact being lax means lassitude, and Dean Martin goes too relaxed. In other words, he was like an Italian drunk. So there was a kind of puritanical ethos in relax, which is positive, and lax, which is negative.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Italian drunk.
Mm-hmm. Small town Italian drunk.
Yeah.
He's from Columbus. I think he's from Columbus, Stone Ohio. So okay. Yes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ohio.
Mm-hmm. What about you in comedy? Your films, they're kind of funny, but not really funny at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I think they're all funny. I think comedy is just strange. It's like what certain people find funny, other people find revolting. I've always thought it was kind of comedy is like confusing. So like what makes you laugh, it's like being turned on. It's like different for all people. So I always think of almost all the films as comedies. But a lot of times they're not watched that way or viewed that way, which is fine. I always set out to do like a, you know, to make like real belly laugh movies.
Well, I think films are comments on other films are usually often begin as spoofs, right?
Yeah.
For example, the Tarantino film, Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah.
That's basically a spoof of a spoof. And some people I'm very close to thought it was an emotional film. I thought it was basically all about cliches of France during the war.
Oh yeah.
During World War II, I think the French woman who's running the cinema, if it wasn't during the war, she would have had a torrid affair with a German soldier. Because Germans and Jewish people really love each other, there's a real connection. And I think the fact that her boyfriend was black was also a cliche of that time period. And I guess most films deal in some ways with stereotypes and cliches.
Yeah,
which are quite funny by themselves.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that movie, but it sounds good.
I'm not a Tarantino film, but yeah. I thought that film actually worked.
Oh really? Mm-hmm. I should check that one out.
Do you remember The Tenth Victim?
Yeah. I should rewatch it because it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. I was watching clips on YouTube, mm-hmm. trying to refresh my memory. But why don't you tell them what it is that you love about it? It's your favorite movie, right?
Mm-hmm. It's very 60s. It's based on a science fiction a story about the eradication of violence in the future. There's a contest which is followed worldwide, where one person is a killer and the other person the victim. So if the victim survives, they become the killer, and they go through ten different pursuers and victims to become a national hero. We're following Marcello Mastroianni, who's going to be the victim of Ursula Andrews, even though they're supposed to kill each other, they wind up falling in love. Marcello Mastroianni makes his living with a sunset cult. So in Los Angeles, where the sun is setting, he puts drops in his eyes and cries and says, "Oh great sun, you are disappearing or you are emerging." There's also a section where Italians really love their parents, but by edict they're supposed to kill their parents after a certain age. In Marcello Mastroianni's house, his parents are on a kind of a Maricel sculpture, where you push the button, they come out, and they act like old Italian parents. I don't know if you remember Maricel, but it's all very much about the whole lightness of the 60s. And the fact is that there's actually no violence in the film, even though it's about violence.
What is it about the movie that like because you really love this film, so what is it that resonates so deeply?
That it has the lightness of the 60s. Another the 60s wasn't as, really that, was a period where cliches of Los Angeles living resonate everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Certainly David Hockney picked up on that.
Yes, sure. Mm-hmm.
What about you in the 70s? Do you think Trash and Prairies has something about the 70s?
No, not really. Like the 70s specifically?
No, movies in the 70s, because it's about...
Oh, movies in the 70s.
Because
yeah.
Movies in the 70s, they were obsessed with the coming of television, and it's about the death of the medium.
Yeah.
And it seems that Trash Humpers has this quality because of the VHS. Uh-huh. And to me, it's a personal theme. It's about the death of the moving image. I don't know if you ever think about these things.
No, I just don't really think about it that much, but I like... What I was thinking about with that movie was that I wanted it to be more like a found object, more like something that was like a discarded. I wasn't really thinking about a specific time, but I guess because I wanted it to be found. Like I remember what it was like finding weird VHS tapes in the dumpsters behind the alleyways where I live. This one lady next door. She collected the entire year of 1987 CNN on VHS, and I just always thought how strange that was, and how it would be nice to make a film that just kind of mimicked this idea of just a found tape, kind of like the kind of thing that my neighbor would throw away. But I wasn't thinking much past that.
The film is that's about the fear that filmmakers had of TV, or is The Apartment by Billy Wilder. I read a 600-page biography of Billy Wilder. He adapted to America very quickly. He liked football, baseball, everything on television, but he hated television itself. So in the film, the guy whose apartment is being used always had the only thing he does at night is have a TV dinner. And I think a lot of Billy Wilder's films are about the fear of television. But of course, as an artist, I think we all learned a lot from Ernie Kovacs. And I learned a lot from conceptual television. I always liked Candid Camera, or Queen for a Day. I remember Roseanne had a very good TV program where she revived all these great conceptual television programs.
Did you like that show, Cops?
Uncensored versions of Cops were given to me as a present by Patrick Painter.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good show.
Yes.
It's still going, that show.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the spin-off also. I don't watch too many things on Comedy Central, but I like Reno 9/11, 9/20.
Have you seen that one, Campus PD?
Oh, no.
That's good, too. Mm-hmm. They just bust frat parties.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the best.
Mm-hmm. What about you on TV? Did you do anything for TV?
Have I directed TV? I've never directed, like, a sitcom. But I directed a couple of magic specials. And but I never directed anything where I was trying to think real quick that has ever made it on like regular television. I like TV. Some of it's pretty exciting.
Why don't you describe I think we all love television now, in terms as a physical medium, because it's dying.
Yeah.
What do you think of Nam June Paik's take on TV as furniture?
Oh, like sitting on it? Yeah, that's a good take.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you think about it?
Well, I'm referencing now to Antoine's wonderful installations. Which also involve some influence of my work because they're involved with anamorphic distortions, but of course the TV set itself was curved. It was anamorphically curved. I did this piece that was never realized the way I wanted it to be realized. So when I was at Nova Scotia College of Art in the early 70s, called Reception Production. It was when cable television was being introduced. They allowed public access programs to be made in different channels. So this is a bit of a structuralist idea. I wanted to broadcast on one cable station. Through the control room, the image of the production of a local news broadcast during the time they call it the happy hour. It's because the local news broadcast is like a family of people who are making jokes about horrible things that were accidents and terrible things that were happening in the community. One public access station showed the production, and the other is a live image of people in their home, in their family home, looking at the news program.
Oh, wow.
And the third channel would be the actual news program.
Wow.
I'm a little critical of it because it's old-fashioned structuralism, but I really like the idea of the relationship of television to the family hour or the happy hour.
Why didn't you make that?
Well, I tried to make it in what is the Nova Scotia College of Art, but it turned out the public access wasn't allowed to use the one public access channel.
Oh, they didn't let you do it?
And I think now, of course, everything is the public access situation is finished. There is no public access.
Yeah. Did you do
it? So I missed my slot.
Would it work on the computer? would it work to do that on the internet?
Well, the problem is I never go back and redo earlier pieces.
All right. Once it's done, it's over.
Once it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
That's the way I am with love.
I was wondering if any of you had any questions, maybe.
I have a question. I don't need a microphone. I had a question for Harmony about Trash Humpers being a feature film, because the structure of it, I mean, the first when I saw it, I was like, that is not a movie, that's a video art piece. Mm-hmm. So I guess I just wanted you to talk a little bit about what it is, what it means to have something like that be a feature film in regular movie theaters.
Well, I just always want everything I do to be in the movie theaters. Like, it's just because I just love watching movies, and I just always think that it should be in the movie theaters. But you can make an argument, a successful argument, that it's not even the movie, maybe isn't a movie. I don't even really care anymore. I don't even really know what a movie, like this idea of movies, like being 2 hours and it's a certain narrative and fitting into this idea. I just don't, it doesn't really mean anything anymore. To me anymore. So, so maybe it's not a film. Maybe it's like the first film to ever get distributed as a movie. That's not really a movie, but I always want it to be in the movies. I always want it to be on screen, like whatever it is. And so, like, I'd always just thought that that's where it had to at least begin. But maybe it's not a film. I don't know. I mean, it's its own thing. I can't even say.
Well, the advantage of film is you have this great sound system, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's a big advantage.
Yeah. It's also, I don't know, there's this idea that everybody looks in the same direction and TVs.
Yeah. Like it's just that everything ends up on the couch anyway. Like, you just, it was, I mean, you're always, it's always going to end up there, but it just needs to start in the theater. Like, wherever it ends up, it doesn't really matter. You watch it on a TV screen, you watch it on your computer screen, it's fine, but for me, I always try to have it at least start in the theater. Or else it almost doesn't exist for me.
I also want to know what you think of Omnimax or 3D.
Yeah. I haven't seen, I haven't seen a lot of the 3D stuff, but I'm not opposed to it if it's good. I think it's, I don't really actually know all that much about the three. I didn't see the movie. Well, it seems like everybody's making them.
Well, my objection to Omnibax is you put goggles on, which reduce your peripheral vision. And I think the thing about seeing things in cinema is in a way you go into your own voyeuristic space, but you're always aware of the audience next to you. And so that's kind of peripheral vision voyeurism. In other words, they may be making out. And I remember when I saw the Runaways film at Landmark Sunshine, and I noticed there was a crowd of young female lesbians in the audience.
At my movie?
What?
At which movie?
The Runaways film. The Runaways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they loved that movie.
What?
They were really into that movie. The lesbians in my neighborhood would line up down the block for that, that film.
I have a question for Dan. Could you talk a little bit about, you said that you wouldn't want to redo a piece, but like that piece where you're in the mirror and you're talking about the audience around you, like that would be really interesting for you to do that now. But why would you make the decision to not re-perform something or re?
Well, if it's in a remote situation, like I did that actually for an art school in Karlsruhe, because they really wanted to see it very badly. So I think if the area is very remote and they haven't had a chance to see it firsthand, I made an exception. But also I get very stale, because the whole thing about that piece is its spontaneity, and I get less and less spontaneous about it. Although I did relax again for this wonderful show, Overdone and Kike, in Los Angeles, because the show is about the relationship between me and Lee Lozano, which was a very good concept for a show. They showed my income outflow piece and her cash piece, my detumescence piece and her masturbation piece. They also had Stephen Kaltenbach, who was a friend of hers, doing a show, doing something on the other room. But that was historic. That was the period was the 60s, late 60s. So that was the Lax Relax comes from the late 60s. So I thought it was a good idea maybe just to reference that time period by redoing that piece. But in general, I'm no longer a performer. That was just a period in my life. I was a performer because everybody in New York in alternative spaces was doing performance. I was able to do the performer audience mirror actually in Riverside Studios in England, where there was a large mirror used in films and for dance that was actually in-house. I also wanted to do it in an alternative space in PS1 in New York, because it was a time when Joseph Beuys was doing performances. And I think my piece was kind of, he was a shaman, Joseph Beuys. And I was trying to do something that was more behavioristic, down to earth, and to deconstruct the idea of the artist as a politician. Also, the audience there was the art world. A lot of the work was about the community, so PS1 was a very good situation for that piece.
I was curious for both of you, what do you think the funniest things in the art world are now, and also what you think some things that you think are just really not funny that everyone else thinks is funny.
You start.
Can you repeat that? Because I have a little bit of a hearing problem.
What is funny in the art world, and what you think that is not funny that everybody thinks is funny?
Sarah Palin.
I guess I don't see enough shows at the moment in the art world to make a comment on that.
Yeah, I don't know that part either. I think most stand-up comedy is not too funny though anymore. Mm-hmm. They just tell jokes too quick. Mm-hmm. Like I would say this, like, it seems like too much of a routine.
I know it was very funny that I saw in the art world. I thought it was wonderful. The Roman Signer show here, that was hilarious, and it also was very physical.
Yeah.
A lot of it. I thought that was incredibly fantastic, funny, and of course the Pettibone show at Davis Werner was very funny.
Yeah.
So I only know the I tried.
Joe to, Bradley show is hilarious. What else is, what's not funny? Like, did other people, what is it, what's not funny that other people find funny?
Well, I think another phrase, I haven't seen it. I didn't see this in New York, but I like the work of William Wegman. I'm not so sure about all the things he's doing with Weimaraners, but there's a highway restaurant complex near where my brother lives in Portland, Maine, and in the area above the counters, which would be like a Greek Freeze situation, they're Weimaraners as a Greek Freeze. So I think a lot of it's the context.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I find his normal one-liner books a little formulistic.
I have a question for Harvey. Some of your works are set in Nashville, and so I know Pressure was really like, kind of a, was built in the Pepperland area. And I'm wondering, then they live there. I was wondering if you could talk about like, the inspiration of Nashville in your work and how that works.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's more like, just like, that's where I'm from, so I understand it, and like, it's like you don't even really think about it, it's just like a part of you, it's like a place, it's like a, you know, it's part of like, my personality. I understand like the people, I don't know, it's just like, I just kind of understand it, I guess, I like it, so I make movies there.
Were those black girls that you had in the fashion ad from Nashville?
Yeah, they were in a band of practices right by my house, and one of them was teaches a class at the School for the Blind, and some of them played basketball, but they were all pretty much from right around my neighborhood.
They were great.
Yeah, they were pretty cool, those girls.
What about artists? I have two favorite comedic artists. One is the always popular Michael Smith. And I also like John. I also like Christian Jankowski. About 75% of the time. I think when he exploits dealers, it's embarrassing for the dealer and for me.
It's never good.
What?
It's never good,
right?
Yeah, no, I make, yeah. Yeah. I swear, I always think they're going to be, like, blockbusters. I mean, I'm not just saying that, I, like, really always, well, maybe not blockbusters, but I feel like they're going to be huge. And then, like, I'm always trying to make movies for, like, this, for a massive audience. It never works, that doesn't work out that way, but I'm always striving for that. I also make them for myself. I think it's possible to make things for yourself and other people, but like, but I always, I never ever want to put a limit on anything. And I'm always actually sad when not more people see it, when it's not playing. And like, well, I wanted Gummo, for instance, to be huge, to play in all the malls across
but
America.
But it was kind of huge at the same time.
Yeah, but I mean like, you know, well, I don't know how huge it was, but...
You mean like mainstream?
Yeah. Like, I wanted Trash Emperors to be taught in schools. Or in the mandatory viewing in public school.
But I read somewhere that you Trash Emperors was William Egglestone's, like, and his influence was his movies, in films, video films.
No, I mean, there was... No, I think someone asked me what the closest film to that Trash Empress was, and I said, maybe it was Stranded in Canton that had a kind of liquid narrative. But it was never, with that movie, I honestly, when we were making it, there was no conscious reference to other, to anything really, other than it just being what it was, like a piece of trash. But I wasn't really thinking about it, but so much in those terms.
But you're right in the sense that it does. There's a correlation between the two, even if we're not thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, he's a friend, and obviously I love his love what he does. And he's from Tennessee.
Would you have? Sorry.
Yeah, I still think it is. Does. Well, just people fornicating with trash. It's like great. And just, I feel like it's just something, like in a lot of ways, what I find appealing about like the Stooges, it's the same thing. I was hoping that people would react to the Humpers. I just feel like they're really, you know, pure, and they have good hearts, and you know, they just love just humping and blowing things up. They're like, they try to just transcend regular evil and violence and make it something beautiful, you know, like make mischief, to elevate mischief into something really incredible.
I don't know, what I really liked about it is when it involves other people, so it's kind of a shift in reality, but people kind of follow through.
Yeah.
And then you can see them in other ways, in a way. It's nice.
Yeah, I like that.
Is there something about like the post-depression era hobo clown? You know, like this sort of clown, this jester-like character became like a hobo all of a sudden. And the clown became this trashy drunkard around town. And it became like, are we laughing because they're outside of our sort of conformity? They're like free? Or are we laughing because, oh, look, they're so miserable? Or, you know, it's like, what are we laughing at when we laugh at like the drunken hobo clown?
Beats the hell out of me.
Do you see your characters as being sort of similar, or are they a different kind of character?
Like, I don't really know. I don't even think about it like that.
Well, are they comedians, or is the movie like a funny movie, or are the actors actually comedians?
Well, what do you think?
They seem like comedians.
Yeah, so that's a good answer.
more so than Gummo.
Yeah.
Gummo, the actors don't. If there's humor in Gummo, the actors don't seem like comedians. It seems like we're finding humor about what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
But in Trash Humpers, they seem like comedians having a good laugh themselves.
Yeah. That's probably. Yeah, that could be. Sounds good.
How would you feel about, you know how they like redid Grey Gardens with Drew Barrymore? Uh-huh. How would you feel if they did that with like kids or something in a few years?
I mean, if the money is right, they can do whatever they can do whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah. Cool.
They better have those greenbacks.
Would you have recast in it?
What's that?
Who would you have recast in it?
It's a Dakota Fanning. I don't know. Twilight cast.
Every time I hear you talk about Trash Humpers, there's always like this huge stress on comedy and about being slapstick comedy and not being funny. And like, I saw it and enjoyed it a lot, but, and I also found it funny, but I think there's something else there.
Yeah.
And if there is there, what other intentions are there being besides?
Well, when I make things, I mean, you talk about this too, maybe, but like when you make things, it's more, for me at least, it's more of like a feeling. So it's like, I don't usually have an agenda when I make films so much as, like, I'm not trying to, I never, like, start out with any kind of message, you know, or at least the message is difficult for me to articulate. So usually it's an emotion or it's a feeling. So, usually attracted to things that are, I find, like maybe slightly emotionally confusing, or something that's things that are funny and both maybe slightly tragic, or things that work in on multi-levels. And so usually, like, when I'm shooting something and I feel like that's starting to happen, I won't question it too much. I just kind of go with it. I don't really, I try to, honestly, I try to tap into something that's more, that's difficult for me to articulate. It's more like, it's more like a feeling. It's more like a, an emotion or something.
I also found it very interesting how you paired comedy with getting off. And it's like, I find that there's porn, and there's porn for like very different tastes and stuff like that. And sometimes I feel that the movie being so unique and just the comedy being so unique, maybe it's just like showing not a direct connection, but also just like getting stuff out there that maybe pleases somebody's, someone else's idea of getting off.
Yeah, sounds good.
Do you push the actors when they on set? Do you like force them to do like?
Force them.
No, not force, but.
Chemicals or something. You put different things in a. You put these different chemicals in a bottle and you shake them up and you document the explosion. So, it's a process. They push the actors.
Yeah, I like that.
What do you do with your actors?
One of my pieces, Past Future Split Attention. I wanted two people who knew each other, but not everything about each other. And the premise of the piece is a videotape, whereas one person always talks about the future of the person who's describing their past. So the version I used are two roommates from the Slade Art School in London, when one person is predicting a future that's not that not a very happy future for the other person, the person whose future is being predicted talks about something that's embarrassing in the past for the other actor. But I decided that I didn't want to be there to direct them, so I left the room and I just let them follow the premise of the piece. It's also about a kind of Mobius strip situation, where one effect affects the other person in a kind of Mobius strip. In general, my work is more like it's more instructional than in terms of directing people.
Yeah, you don't improvise.
I don't improvise.
Yeah.
In other words, I improvise when I perform myself.
But you set up an apparatus.
I set up an apparatus. Yes.
Anybody just blurt the shit. Me? With my relationship with cartoons? It's funny, I was talking to a friend about that today. My wife yelled at me because she says it's not healthy to make your 2-year-old daughter watch 6 hours a day. So I gotta watch that. My relationship is usually I just have my daughter watch a lot of cartoons.
Which cartoons? SpongeBob?
Yeah, but those are pretty short. I like to put on the long ones so that I don't have to be interrupted. And then I watch Handy Mandy. It's a good one. Little Bear. What about you, Dan?
My use of car, actually in video projection outside of house, that was just a still, still because it's a piece that I conceived in 78 where the video projector was being introduced, and decided that instead of ornamentation, people should have a video projection outside of what they're watching on the home TV inside through the picture window. And when it was videotaped, it was finally realized in Santa Barbara, and I asked everybody, normally people would watch PBS, kids would watch cartoons, or maybe at night that people would watch porno. So it gives the idea of what family life is like to people on the outside as kind of ornamentation. But then I did this permanent video, this installation called A Water to the Sunset at the Haywood Gallery, where their video monitors where kids can watch cartoons. But I also had cartoons, classic cartoons like Crazy Cat, historical cartoons which maybe grandparents can appreciate, and up-to-date cartoons like Powerpuff Girls. And the screen also the computer screens also show videos from the British Arts Council, and one of the videos was Tracy Ehrman's video why I'm Not a Dancer, about her early sex life. So you could actually look at a cartoon if you're like 8 or 9 years old, and then press the computer screen and get Tracy Emin's. So yeah. So I like to mix cartoons with other content in this piece.
Yeah, that works great. Mm-hmm. Oh, with the suburbs? I guess I just grew up, I don't know if the suburbs, like I never grew up in the suburbs, but I grew up in places, I guess, that some people say it looks maybe a little bit like the suburbs, but it's just real American stuff. It's everywhere.
Harmony.
Yeah.
As from somebody from Tennessee, have you ever gone to Dollywood?
Yeah. Actually, I can't really tell the story. It's pretty graphic. But I met this when I was like 13 or 14. I met this girl at Dollywood. It was amazing.
There was also a Twitty Land.
Oh yeah, Twitty City. Yeah.
He actually lived there.
I actually had my bar mitzvah party there.
Really?
Yeah.
No, his family ran it, and he was in the top floor in the bedroom, and one of his children, who was a guide, said, if you yell Conway, he'll might appear and wave to you, which he did.
Oh yeah, he did. Yeah.
So it became a kind of a family theme park where they actually lived there.
My rabbi, I had a rabbi who'd wear a rebel flag yarmulke. Mm-hmm. Used to work there, mm-hmm. And anyway, mm-hmm. He would say the prayers. It was amazing. Baruch Atah Adonai. Anyway, he sold tickets.
Have you done anything with theme parks?
No, mm-hmm. Like specifically theme parks. No, you.
I actually think I think of what our artists are doing now is an antidote to Disneyland.
Is what?
An antidote to Disney culture.
Explain that a little bit.
Most cultural events are a little like Disneyland, and today there's a great interest in people doing work that's about spectacle. So I think the point is to do something that's anti-spectacle, but using the modus operandi of spectacles.
Is that what do you think? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's necessary because there's a because I think there's an entertainment industry.
So you think of art more in terms of entertainment than anything?
Well, I think the model for general cultural events, and you, certainly a good it's I think I'd like to do more I'd like doing work for big shows like Documenta, because I'm in big shows like Documenta, Documenta is basically a combination of entertainment and education at the same time. And those shows take place in the summer, and usually parents come with their family in family cars, and they view these big art events as both entertainment and education. My critique of the Documenta that Catherine DeVee did. Was too much like Encyclopedia Britannica. It was full of lectures and everything was behind glass. So I think you have to relate to these very large thematic exhibitions that way. And then the next Documenta, which was done by Jan Hood, was more like Disneyland. It was all about entertainment.
Yeah.
We've been talking about that. It's embarrassing. You don't want to.
Well, I think Harmony and I's work deals with something that's very popular, not very popular these days, Americana.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have to admit that I've always been interested in Nashville product.
In what's that?
Nashville product. Product.
Products. You should come down and I'll show. Mm-hmm. Introduce you to some product. some
national. No, I like country and western.
Yeah, me too.
Although it's my favorite country and western star doesn't actually live in Nashville. He's Merle Haggard.
Oh yeah, he's got California.
Bakersfield.
Yeah.
Oh, but he's decided that he's against the oil industry.
Yeah.
His new friend is Willie Nelson, and he's become a lefty, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Merle's great.
Mm-hmm. I think I have the last...
We call him the hag.
The hag, yeah.
The last question is about today. I think it was discovered there's a 13th sign in the horoscope.
Oh, yeah, so explain that. So Dan is very much into astrology.
I don't understand it, but I'm very worried because I'm doing a column for Domus Magazine, the architecture magazine from Milano, about astrology and architecture. And I've just done the first one about Louis Kahn, who's an Aquarius, and I'm afraid it could throw off all my theories.
Do you have anything, any other question to ask?
Why I love your films, it's actually that in this mess, it's like there's so much coming out of your characters. So beautiful. If you watch John Cassavetes' films, it's like all about the performance, the actors, the characters, and what's beautiful in their heart. And don't you think, maybe you're not trained to do it, but don't you think that's because I watched Trent Shepard a week ago, and to be honest, I was thinking, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
After 20 minutes, even if I loved all your films before. And then at the end, the last 1 minute or so, when she holds the baby, I just found you again. I was like, I got the point of the whole thing, and actually, I've been through 60 minutes of pain, and now I actually enjoy what I watch just because of that last minute.
I'm just trying to create magic. Thank you, though. Thanks.